You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Let's get to the FBI informant. You know who the guy is now?
Well, yes, we do. We certainly do. And there was talk amongst a few of the members very shortly before the raids happened that they were beginning to flush this guy out as an informant or as a Fed. I only wish that they had done something about it. By that point, it was kind of too late because it was 2 months before the raid that happened. The first time I ever encountered him was at another militia function, and he complimented me on my video camera. And I hadn't remembered that until the trial, when the prosecutor put Dan Murray up on the stand. This guy was dumb enough to use his real name. Wow, that's real smart, dude. The first few days of his testimony involved me. I was named more than a couple of the defendants, actually, in the early part of the investigation. I kind of liked Dan at first, but looking back, I remember him trying to goad me into saying something bad about cops. The second time I met him was my first militia training. He's tried to lead me into making some statements, even though he wasn't wearing a wire that day. I remembered that distinctly about this guy. But it never raised any red flags with me, really, at the time.
Every American feels good about cops. Every American loves to see a cop at the side of the road texting or not paying attention, not really driving around the neighborhoods to make sure that things are safe, not solving crimes, making almost $100,000 a year. So every American loves cops, right?
Right. Especially when they're intimidating and taser everybody right left.
Exactly. Yeah. So why would this moron come and try to get you to say something negative about cops? Because I'm sure most people have many negative things to say about cops. Oh, God, you can't say anything bad. Why not? We're Americans. We can say whatever we want.
That's correct, as long as there's no action behind it. These guys got persecuted for a thought crime, is what it was. You think a bad thing about a cop or something, you say a little donut joke here and there, you're nailed on the cross.
You guys started to sniff this. What was his name again?
Dan Murray. I call him the undead dead guy, because he was the one they faked his death to lure us into the warehouse the day of the raids. And when they put the cuffs on me, or the little plastic handcuff things, I knew Dan wasn't dead. You know, we don't hold any animosity at all toward these people, toward any of these people. They pick their choice in life, and they have to live with themselves for the rest of their life, lest of their proven unhappy lives, such as Dan Murray. This guy is a miserable lout. He was a pill addict. He was an alcoholic. He had incidences with his wife where he stabbed his wife and then stabbed himself and then blamed it on the wife, and then he discharged a weapon in their house. The defense attorneys pretty much tore this guy's life apart. And really, in the end, you just look at this sorry, sad man, and you have nothing but pity for him. And I think pretty much that's how we all feel. Pity's the worst thing you can have for someone, really.
Right.
If you think about it, I'm sure everybody would agree with me on that.
Government picked another winner. It's amazing that there's no organization that is there to take a look at what the FBI and organizations like that are doing, how they're doing their jobs, maybe like an internal affairs type division that's separate, that there's no conflict of interest, to say, wait a second, there's nothing here. What are you doing?
Yeah. Apparently, when the head agent, Leslie Larson, was told from the higher-ups in Washington that she couldn't go in and execute any warrants on this group because there wasn't enough evidence. And apparently she told them to mind their own business. This is my case.
Wow.
In no uncertain terms, she said that to the higher ups in Washington. Why they didn't clamp down on her then, I have no idea. She was a pencil pusher before she became special agent head on this case, and apparently she's been demoted laterally, they said, to an evidence gathering position again.
I'm surprised they didn't promote her.
Here's the reality of what happened in terms of the government side of it. What we had here was head agent Leslie Larson at the time. Her cousin, Sandra Larson, that worked for the Michigan State Police in the investigations unit, and then we had Dan Murray, and then later we had Steve Haug. We called him Jersey Steve because his cover story was that he came from New Jersey. He's a New Jersey truck driver and can get Dave Stone whatever he wanted. Ooh.
Right.
That was his cover story. So we had these four individuals were the ones that were meeting and conspiring against us. And they were the ones that came up with all these crazy conspiracy theories about the funeral and luring a cop out to a field, and then Dave was going to take him out. And then, oh, when the funeral for this policeman happened, and Dave was going to plant IEDs. And none of that ever was true. None of that was true. It was just something that they were caught one time for 2 minutes out of 200 hours of recording. For 2 minutes, Dave said something off the cuff about that, and then they made a big deal about it and said, this is the conspiracy theory. They're conspiring against the United States, and this is how they came up with these seditious conspiracy charges. And it was made up out of the blue from Leslie Larson and Sandra Larson. Ridiculous. Unreal.
So out of 200 hours of taping, now did they have Bill Murray there also? Because this is turning into a comedy. Was Bill Murray part of the team there or no?
No. Bill was late that day.
Okay. Well, you never know. I mean, because this is funny. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
By the way, pass me a hot dog.
That's right.
Yeah. You said it was about 2 months before they'd committed their raid. That's when you started to sniff out, or you or somebody else started to sniff out, that Murray might be an informant. So how long was he there the entire time before the raid? Was it 2 months or was it 3 months?
September of 2009, and then the raids happened March of 2010. They pulled Dan Murray out, I'd say, from January.
It's like 5 months.
Yeah. When they inserted the FBI agent, he was the one that was really trying to get Dave to say all kinds of stuff. And it's really not hard to get Dave Stone to start talking about stuff, because he likes to talk. He loves to hear himself talk. They got all kinds of stuff, but nothing concrete. It's just all stuff he said that was his First Amendment rights. The whole thing was a farce and a joke from the beginning.
Yeah. So besides Dan Murray, there was an actual FBI agent who inserted himself in the group?
Yes, the FBI inserted him, yes. Dan Murray's buddy, Jersey Steve. Steve from New Jersey.
He was an actual FBI agent, or was he just another informant?
Agent.
He was an agent?
He was an agent.
Okay.
He was an agent. Shortly after that, they took Dan Murray out of there. Although they were dual recording them, they would go to multiple trainings together, and both would be recording. Both men would be recording, so there's just hours and hours and hours of this arduous tape of inane babbling and dogs barking.
And people munching on hot dogs. Dumb and dumber. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Did they take part in the weenie roast, too? I mean, did they eat the food, too?
Yes, they did, actually. And I think Haug, the FBI agent, actually bought some of the rounds of food for them. I'm sure that, yeah.
The whole time you were in the Hutari militia, and did you guys call yourselves militia? Is that what you referred to yourselves as?
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh,
so the whole time you were in that Hutari
constitutional militia.
The whole time you were in there, you never once heard anybody talking about harming anybody.
No, I can't say that, because just as we were just now joking about Dick Cheney, that's the kind of talk we would always do. We still have talk like that. I won't shut up about stuff like that, because it's my First Amendment right. Yeah, we talked about stuff like that.
But you didn't have any plans to...
No, not even remotely. They claimed that these guys wanted to take over three counties. We just looked at each other going, how in the heck would these guys take over three counties? Like, nine guys take over three counties. Okay, you know, the nine that were indicted. None of it made any sense. It was all smoke and mirrors.
If you were planning on some kind of event that they claimed you were, why would you videotape it and put it on the internet?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, none of this made any sense at all. And the jury thought so, too.
How do the good people over at the band Poker Face fit in with all this?
I met Paul at Knob Creek. Those guys always play at Knob Creek every year. And started talking to him and emailing him and things like that. But what happened was, after the raids happened and these guys got arrested, FBI agents went to Paul's house and was questioning him about Hutari. And aside from me, he didn't really know these guys real well at all. So he couldn't really help them. But the fact that they're running around trying to bring other people like Paul in different states and trying to connect these guys is just so far-reaching and so incredible to me. Paul's a great guy. He changes the world through his music. It was the FBI that involved him. I don't know how or why they went and talked to Paul about it.
I thought that maybe you guys had used some of Poker Face's music in one of your videos.
Yes, I think that was one of their videos, yes. If that's the reason why they went and talked to Paul, then that's even kind of lamer, you know? It's a really lame excuse.
Yeah, let's see. Geez, you used Poker Face's music, and they're a patriot hit rock band, and God, that's dangerous. But rap music is okay. We can talk about murdering people.
In fact, that was one of the defense attorney's points, was Ice-T came out with the song Cop Killer, and NWA had another cop killing song, F the Police. That was the NWA.
NWA is niggers with attitude, right?
Yeah, well, no, that's actually wrong.
Okay, what is?
Niggas with attitude,
N-I-G-G-A.
N-I-G-G-A.
Okay.
Yeah, N-I-G-G-A. Because there's a difference between N-I-G-G-E-R and N-I-G-G-A.
What is that difference?
Niggas, what they all call each other, you know, in the rap circles, and then nigger is the derogatory use of that word.
Okay, I see. If I call him a nigga, if I say it like that, if I say nigga, hey nigga, what are you doing? Then that's okay. I'm not really saying the N-word because I'm talking like they talk.
Right, exactly.
Okay,
but you kind of want to make sure you're around some folks that really understand that that's what you mean. Because if you say that to the wrong person, somebody's going to get their panties in a bunch.
They're going to pop a cap in my ass or something like that.
That's
right.
Could be a very distinct possibility. Yeah, the point of the defense attorney bringing that up is that you don't see Ice-T being convicted of seditious conspiracy, and you don't see NWA getting seditious conspiracy charges on them. It's freedom of speech. It's freedom of speech, bottom line. Those guys had the right to write songs like that. These guys had the right to say that they were going to send drippers to the funeral of the cop. They were being recorded, laughing and joking about this police funeral thing and the IEDs at the cop funeral. Yeah, well, let's send some male strippers over there and get their attention that way. And then, well, let's hang some free donut signs out and we can lure them that way, you know. And it was just 101 scenarios. You can do whatever, you know. They were just joking around. It's ridiculous. And that was the basis for their seditious conspiracy charge.
Oh, my God. I mean, could you imagine if serious happens? We're in deep, you know what. They implant the FBI informant and the FBI agent, and then the raid happens. Were you there for the raid?
Yes, I was.
What were you doing right before the raid? Were you doing hot dogs and hamburgers again, or?
No. That day, everybody met at my house because they came up from Adrian and Manchester's in between Adrian and Ann Arbor. So everybody met at my house, and we took Mike Meeks and my ex-husband and my stepson all rode in one car, and we followed Dave and his son and his wife and a friend of theirs. And we followed Dave to the stinking warehouse in Ann Arbor. The agent told Dave that Dan Murray had died and that his wife hated the militia and she didn't want anything to do with us and she didn't want us at her husband's funeral and all this. So his good friend, Jersey Steve, was going to hold a memorial service for Dan just for the Hutari members at this warehouse. And I thought that that was a really weird, that was my first red flag that went up. Like, why are we going to a memorial service at a warehouse? That doesn't make sense to me. But I kind of liked Dan, and I was sad that he had died, so I decided to go. We drove there, we turned in this dang driveway, and I said, something is janky here, you guys, and it didn't feel right to me at all. And I stated that. We pull up, there was like no cars around at all, and I'm like, okay, well, there is somebody supposed to be here to let us in. It was weird. It was just really strange.
Right.
Dave seemed like he had been there before. So we get out, and the door to the warehouse, it was the back entrance, I could tell, to this warehouse. And there was a gigantic Hutari sticker on this door. And I'm going, why in blazes would anybody want to put a giant sticker like that on the door of a business? There goes red flag number two. Then these red flags just kept popping, popping, popping the minute I walked in the door. The minute I walked in the door, we see the staircase leading up to a loft, but all the stairs had been freshly sawed off except for the top two. And my stepson was like, well, why are these stairs like sawed off? That's ridiculous. Well, we had to get that big truck in here and we couldn't fit it in unless we sawed this off. And we kind of looked at each other going, okay. There was another red flag. The red flags were starting to stink at this point. Everything inside of me was saying, why don't you get out of there? There was this lame stack of sub sandwiches there and a bag of ice thrown on a table and some pop there. And I asked that Steve guy, why didn't you tell us to bring some food? We could have all brought food. And he said, well, I just told Dave, never mind, I had it handled. I'm like, okay. And he was very nervous, very nervous. He was jumpy, he was nervous. It was like he was about to jump out of his skin. I thought that was real strange. So we all sat around, talked, and we're eating our subs. They had a brand new 50-inch plasma screen TV there. There was two wet weddings that had happened. Josh Stone got married 2 weeks before that. They started showing the pictures that Jersey Steve's girlfriend took of the weddings. And she was an agent too, actually, it turns out. So they had this poker face music jamming out on this plasma screen TV to these Hutari wedding pictures. And it was up so loud on purpose so that we couldn't really hear what was going on in the front of the building, which was all the feds up there. So what happened was Jersey Steve tapped Dave Stone on the shoulder and motioned for him to come outside. So those two left. Then the door just slam shut, and we all looked at each other like, what the heck was that all about? And then, like, within 25 seconds, fully jack-booted FBI thugs just came out with 22 M4s pointed at our heads. And we were all staring at him with glazed eyes, thinking, wow, this isn't really happening, is it? Is this a joke? You know, we all thought it was a joke.
Right.
But then we saw the FBI emblems on their gear, and we cooperated. None of us put up a struggle, and we did absolutely everything we were told from the beginning straight to the end of the trial. These guys had exemplary behavior for the 2 years they were in jail. Everybody cooperated. Nobody fought. Nobody resisted. Nobody said a word, really. They took all my friends away, and they questioned me and my stepson and my ex-husband for a couple of hours, and then they released us. Meanwhile, in two other states, they were conducting similar raids, two in Ohio and one in Indiana. That was for Tom Piatek, our buddy there. They took Mike Meeks' parents' house and raided his parents' house, because that was his address that he had used on his driver's license, although he lived up the street in a different house on a lake. They didn't have a mailbox or anything, so he used his parents' address. They raided his parents and their elderly. They had both of Mike Meeks' parents down on the cement floor of their garage, and their house is wide open, yet they still felt the need to go and bust down their front door. They had tanks, they had copters, they had snipers in the trees trained on Mike's parents' house. I'm not kidding. Absolute, complete insanity. It was the most traumatic night of my life.
Really? In your whole life?
I was traumatized. Oh, yeah. I stayed up all night long staring at poor Mike Meeks' truck outside of my window and crying. None of us slept that night. None of us.
How many of the FBI agents with their M4s burst in?
There was 22.
So there were basically as many FBI agents, as many Hutare militia members that met.
Right, but there was only 9 that were arrested, and there was only, I think, 7 of us there on the day of the raid, I'm pretty sure. There was 9 of us, but they took 7 of us away.
I meant the 22 number that we talked about earlier. Do you know what Dave Stone did for a living when he was working?
I think he worked in a factory for 10 years. The judge asked him this yesterday because she wanted to determine whether he was competent enough to understand that he's pleading guilty to the weapons charges. He said he worked in a factory for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.